heavy fresh snow and winds resulting in an avalanche advisory.
Fortunately, when you get conditions like this, there's always a risk of avalanche and avalanche.
That an avalanche did occur this morning.
Looking at our avalanche forecast today and tomorrow, we have high avalanche risk for all levels of Mount Hood.
That corner right there. That's all right.
From our studios in downtown Portland, Oregon, this is a Coin6 digital exclusive.
Welcome back into another Coin6 Your Weather podcast. Today we are talking all about avalanches and the risks going into the rest of our winter time. We've got a big mountain just to our east, and sometimes when conditions are right, the avalanche increase and the risk starts to increase. So we're talking to Robert Hahn of the the Northwest Avalanche Center. He's an avalanche forecasting meteorologist. Welcome, Robert. Thanks for speaking today.
Yeah, thanks for having me here. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so I've kind of read your bio, and you are a backcountry skier, and you also have your master's in atmospheric sciences. So you know all about the backcountry and kind of forecasting these avalanches. So I'm really excited to kind of chat about all that today.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk with you about it and share some knowledge and see where the conversation leads.
All right. So when I go online to the website, I often read about slab avalanches and kind of their setup. Can you go more into detail about how they form and how that kind of ties into snow levels warming and sometimes when we see more rainfall up in the mountains?
Yeah. So they're essentially a slab is a cohesive dense layer of snow, and it you can get them in a variety of ways, but essentially in order for a slab to become an avalanche, you need that denser layer to have a layer that's less dense, called a weak layer, underneath it, and that setup becomes particularly can be reactive in and of itself. Reactive meaning it can release suddenly, or it can be particularly reactive sometimes when you have a crust underneath. But to get that reactivity, oftentimes you need either rapid loading rates of the snow onto the existing snowpack. So when you have periods of heavy snowfall, the snow essentially it can't adjust quickly enough to the rates of loading. But the most surefire way to develop unstable slabs is to get a warming trend with increasing precipitation, and that leads to heavier snow falling on top of less dense layers. That can fail without warning. Mm-hmm. Once you reach a certain tipping point. But when the whole thing changes to rain, it usually causes steep slopes to release naturally. So, that's a little bit of the nutshell version of slab avalanche formation when we're talking about storm slabs. Mm-hmm. There are different avalanche problems, and you can also generate this setup through wind loading. So you actually don't need snow to be actively falling out of the sky in order to create a slab. You can also transport snow from other areas. Frequently, that snow blows over a ridgeline and accumulates on the lee side. And if you imagine the amount of area on one side of a mountain, if all that snow blows off and it deposits on the other side of the mountain, frequently it doesn't redistribute in the same way that it was taken from the opposing slope. It mostly accumulates in one area, so you can get these really quickly forming mounds of snow, essentially, mm-hmm. On the slope. And you can actually see them on the slope when they're forming. It changes the look and character of the snow in such a way that because essentially when you're moving that snow along the ground, you're breaking up the crystals and you're actually making that snow denser. Once it settles, it's much more tightly interlocking. Mm-hmm. Hence the denser layer that you're building onto whatever snow was pre-existing.
Yeah.
So you have your slab formation on that weaker layer.
That's a really good visual, what you just described. So these are kind of massive amounts of snow redistributing on the, opposite sides of a mountain sometimes.
Right. And that's really important at Mount Hood. I mean, I would say of all the 10 forecast zones that we have at the Northwest Avalanche Center, wind slab is most frequent at Mount Hood. And mm-hmm. those wind slabs are frequently larger than they are in other areas, simply because there's a lot of above treeline terrain, and also the winds just tend to be stronger at Mount Hood. There are no high mountains surrounding it, and so there's nothing to block that wind.
Yeah.
So it comes right off. At say 5,000 feet, it comes straight from the Pacific Ocean and it impacts Mount Hood, and there it starts transporting snow from one side of a ridge to the other.
Wow, that's really cool. So you just described the difference between a wet slab avalanche and then a wind slab avalanche. And you're saying that Mount Hood tends to see higher winds. You know, there's really nothing blocking the winds straight from the south, to Mount Hood. So Mount Hood does tend to get more wind slab avalanches.
Right. I have to correct you slightly. I first described the storm slab avalanche, and then I... the wet slab is a little bit of a trickier avalanche problem.
Okay.
Because frequently, if you put rain on snowpack, you destabilize the surface,
mm-hmm.
And you get these point releases that we call loose wet avalanches. So mm-hmm. they're not actually slabs. So usually, to get a wet slab, you actually need the rain to get down to either some sort of crust or persistent weak layer. If we have a layer of what we call facets or surface hoar, these are grain types that are mm-hmm. once they're loaded, they become very unstable. So. Mm-hmm. So wet slabs are very difficult to forecast, and we don't actually list wet slabs as a problem very often in the Mount Hood area.
Okay.
But if you see them in the forecast, you should be very cautious.
Yeah, I think I saw them a couple weeks ago.
they're worrisome for professionals and recreationalists alike because of the difficulty in forecasting them and predicting where they're going to fail.
Do you know much about how resorts or what resorts do to mitigate avalanches, especially if we do see wet slab avalanches? Because I am pretty sure maybe a week or two that was on the NWAC website for the Mount Hood area.
Yeah. I think that they do the same thing for most large avalanche problems, which is they detonate explosives just above the surface of the snowpack.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that detonation in places where they think they're most likely to trigger an avalanche. So at the start zone of a wind-loaded slope, for instance, or in the case of a wet slab, you want to do it on maybe the steepest part of an unsupported slope. Unsupported meaning the slope gets steeper as you go down it, and therefore its gravity is trying to pull it off from where it was resting. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, they sometimes with smaller avalanche problems like small wind slabs or shallow storm slabs, the ski patrol will use ski cuts and try to initiate the avalanche in that way, knowing that the avalanche problem is small enough that if they have a safe point that they can get to, they'll trigger the avalanche. It'll run, it'll release an entrained slope below it, but it won't take them with it. But with things like wet slabs and deeper storm slabs or large wind slabs, they can't do that and they have to use explosives. So every day the forecasting operation at the resort at Mount Hood Meadows, for instance, they'll call NWAC. They'll get a weather forecast from us, and they take that weather forecast. They take their knowledge of the snowpack from the previous day. They include in the changes that have occurred with the weather overnight, and they make some sort of internal forecast about what their avalanche problems are likely to be for that day, particularly, you know, during that period of time before the ski area opens, when they have ski patrol member folks running ski routes and mm-hmm. trying to trigger any instabilities. Mm-hmm. So I don't know at Mount Hood Meadows, for instance, whether what kind of artillery they shoot, but suffice it to say, on their bigger slopes, they probably yeah. put a lot of
thought
lot of explosive on the snow when they're anticipating large or very large avalanches.
Wow, that's pretty cool to hear about. You know, so much goes into making sure the slopes are okay for folks, you know, inbounds, but also out of bounds too. So, are there any specific spots on Mount Hood that are prone to avalanches? Like maybe the south sides or the east sides, or maybe closer to highways that people typically drive on, or maybe even elevations that we tend to see the most avalanches?
Well, you know, I think in general, your avalanche danger tends to increase as you go up the mountain, and that's for a number of reasons. Since wind slabs tend to be the biggest problem on Mount Hood, the winds they're just stronger as you mm-hmm. as you go up. There's less drag from the surface holding back the winds, and so winds are stronger at higher altitudes, and as a result, they're transporting more snow. Temperatures are also consistently colder at higher altitudes, and so weaker layers can persist longer, and you can build, Mount Hood is known for getting a lot of wind, but it's also known for getting a lot of rain crusts. And those rain crusts, are formed by rain falling on the snowpack and then refreezing as you get cooler weather coming in. Mm-hmm. But those rain crusts are going to be fewer and farther between the higher you head up on the mountain. And so the size of your wind slab or storm slab is limited by the depth to that last crust. And so if, you know, up higher on the mountain, you can get far bigger avalanches because that crust may be, many feet down as opposed to maybe below 4,000 or 5,000 feet. You might find on a given day that it's a matter of inches below the surface. So so it definitely varies. Mm-hmm. It depends on things like that. But I would say that one of the biggest things is the direction of the winds. So if in the climate normal, the winds in our region are coming out of the southwest. And so they tend to be loading, north through east facing aspects. Mm-hmm. And so those aspects tend to be unstable, but the reality is that Mount Hood is a relatively circular barrier. And so, it deflects winds around it. So depending on what the actual, upstream wind direction is, the wind's direction at any one point on the mountain can change, pretty significantly. Mm-hmm. I've observed some very interesting things forecasting for Mount Hood. One of which is that if you have southerly winds in the forecast, sometimes they'll forecast strong southerly winds, and at Mount Hood Meadows, the winds are light, and that's because those winds, as they're forced to go sort of up the mountain on the south side, they decelerate. But you can bet that on the north side of the mountain, when there are southerly winds, those winds are accelerating. And so Mount Hood is, being a volcano, it's a little bit unique in that you might find very different conditions on one side of the mountain from the other. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty difficult to call that out in the forecast, but it's something that as a Mount Hood skier, you should be aware of, or a skier or any backcountry recreationalist, mm-hmm. should be aware that that this phenomenon happens, where the upstream slopes essentially are likely to have less strong winds than on either side or on the lee side of the mountain, and not just in the broader scope of the problem, but then, you know, there are many ridges and valleys, each one of which is redirecting the winds, and that's why, yeah. We don't frequently say you're likely to find wind slabs on north and east aspects, because even if we're forecasting a southwest wind, in some locations wind slabs may be forming on west or south aspects, mm-hmm. Even though the wind is coming from the southwest. Mm-hmm. So
so there is no rule of thumb.
So yeah.
Yeah, very good. Okay, that was very informative. It seems like when we hear about avalanches, they're the ones that have injured or even killed someone. And I think there was maybe a story back in Idaho a couple weeks ago or a month ago of a skier dying. But I'm curious about the avalanche activity so far this winter on Mount Hood. Is this one that has seen, you know, above average avalanches, or is it pretty normal, or what have you observed out here?
Well, I've been forecasting for 3 seasons. I think, I think we got a late start, and it's been a very active weather pattern, mm-hmm. Since we started. But temperatures have been a little bit above average, except for that first 2 weeks in January. And I would say that, frequently there are periods of intense avalanche activity at Mount Hood. Mm-hmm. So since we've been forecasting since about December 13th, I'm having trouble deciding whether it's normal or slightly above normal, but it's certainly not anomalous.
Okay.
This year.
Okay.
It might even be slightly below normal, because at times, you know, I take that back. It has been windy, mm-hmm. Particularly through December. It was just incredibly windy, and so I think there were just wind slabs building every day, it seemed. Mm-hmm. And those types of weather patterns are problematic for stability at Mount Hood, mm-hmm. when you're getting a lot of wind. So
okay, so this podcast is going to continue to play throughout the next month or two, but this week, which is the last week of January, we have a very high risk of avalanche danger on Mount Hood right now. Can you maybe dissect the forecast and why we're seeing those conditions at this point in time?
Yeah, you know, we had a warm rain event that that got up pretty high onto the slopes of Mount Hood, and I didn't write the Mount Hood forecast, so I'm speaking from in more high level from a high level perspective here.
Right.
But that rain event was followed by some storms, but we were seeing some reactive snow with a relatively poor bond to that stout and poorly bonded crust. So the result is that we have a layer, a bed surface, i.e. that ice layer,
right,
that is showing signs that it's capable of producing very large avalanches. In fact, there was an avalanche up on the upper mountain of Mount Hood that was quite impressive. And there's a photograph in the avalanche product from yesterday. And our Mount Hood forecaster Peter Moore thinks that bed surface and the slab structure for triggering avalanches on that bed surface is not going away immediately. So he thinks that with all of the additional snowfall from last night, which came on a bit of a warming trend, it's just gonna load up that weak interface and bring it to the point of releasing large. I don't know if he has very large avalanches in that product, but certainly the threat on the upper mountain is there for very large avalanches.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on, and he thinks that continued precipitation throughout the day is going to continue to put stress on the snowpack, and it just needs some time to stabilize, and the weather's just not letting up to give it that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been so stormy lately. Yeah, so we'll be watching that this week. But for the backcountry skier, obviously, we're all not encouraging any backcountry travel this week. But can you briefly gloss over some of the types of gear that you use when you go out there, or that a backcountry skier should take, like the importance of like an avalanche beacon and all of that gear?
Certainly. I would say that the fundamentals are, an avalanche beacon, a shovel, and a probe. And those three pieces of gear are only as useful as you know how to use them. Mm-hmm. So getting a level one avalanche training course is really important. And then practicing search and rescue when you're not in the throes of rescuing your friend or ski partner is really important. So those are the basics, I think nowadays it's pretty common that if you're going into avalanche terrain, you do a beacon check every time you go, every time you leave the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other piece there is having the importance of conversations. It's not just having and knowing how to use the equipment, but it's also having the conversations with your group about what are your risks, what kind of avalanche problems are you dealing with, where is it safe to go and where is it not safe to go. And it's important to have those conversations before you're actually in the mountains, because once you see a tempting slope, you're more likely to talk yourself into skiing it or snowmobiling it or snowshoeing on it than if you set out at the beginning of the day and you said, the avalanche forecast says that there are large slabs that you can trigger on slopes steeper than 35 degrees above a certain angle. I'm just giving you a hypothetical example here.
Right.
But essentially the importance of coming to your decisions before you actually are faced with choices, and limiting those choices to reducing the terrain if you see something that that departs from the from the avalanche forecast, rather than saying, "Well, I wasn't planning to ski that slope, but it looks awfully tempting." what do you say? It seems pretty stable today. Let's go check that one out. So those are sort of the group dynamics that that can be challenging, the sort of spontaneity of impulses, and managing that is really important, actually, and that's something that the avalanche community is working harder to address.
Yeah, that was very well said. So if you are someone who wants to go out in the backcountry, where is a good spot to get information? Like, your guys' website is very thorough.
Yeah, I mean, I would direct people to our website. I think, you know, our forecasts are improving by the year, particularly with Peter Moore, who's a full-time forecaster now, based out of the Mount Hood area, and we have a professional observer who also collects an observation each week. And the two of them are liaising with the ski areas and various folks who are heading out regularly into the mountains to get you guys the most up-to-date and accurate information possible, and also making use of our mountain weather forecasting capabilities at NWAC. So it's an evolving and improving product that, you know, I think it on the actual avalanche forecasting side of things is definitely trending in the right direction and becoming quite good for snowpack, for observations. We're still trying to get more and more people to submit information on what they see when they head out into the Mount Hood backcountry and submit it on our observations platform. On our website, you can go to it's a little tab. Anyway, it's a little tab where you can submit an observation, and cool. That's where that can be a great way to say, hey, snap a photo. We saw an avalanche on this aspect at this elevation, or we didn't see any avalanches. The snowpack was right side up and was relatively stable, and give that information back to NWAC so we can make a better forecast. And if people use the platform in that way, it can really also improve people's ability to know where the better snow conditions are likely to be found. So
that's great. Well, is there anything else you want to add? I think I'm pretty much done with the questions that I have.
We've covered quite some range. So
we have. It's been great to kind of hear more about the forecast and, you know, what really goes into it and how the weather and the winds play a huge part, especially out towards Mount Hood. So thank you for your expertise. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was happy to connect with you and hopefully connect with the broader Portland community. So
yeah.
And I do write the Mount Hood zone sometimes, so it's very important for me to stay connected with the community there, and I hope to get down to Mount Hood later in the season and tour around some. So
yeah, that'll be awesome, and I'll try and check in with Peter Moore too, and also stay in contact with
absolutely.
With you and all the folks at NWAC. So again, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, and have a wonderful day.
You too.
The Coin6 Podcast Network is your home for all sorts of content you can't find anywhere else. Visit coin.com/coinpodcast to see our entire library. And you can always subscribe to all of the Coin6 Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.